all, Senator Mandel suggested they wanted an anxious to debate you again. Would you like to debate him again?
Well, it'd be pretty difficult, but I guess the vice president could debate a senator. We'll try to work it out next year some way. You know, either way it works, one of us is going to be one, one's going to be the other.
With the election 2 weeks away, sir, can we expect any changes in strategy or surprises in the campaign?
I don't know of any surprises. I mean, it happened. I might be surprised. I don't think so. I mean, I think we're going to continue, as we have in the past, to get out, see the people, and just work in areas we think we can win in.
Mr. Dole, have you gotten much heat about your remark about the Democrats and the wars the other night? And did you mean to blame the Democrats for the wars?
Well, I think if you listen carefully or listen at all, I said if they want to keep bringing up Watergate, the Nixon pardon, then we might talk about some wars in our past. And we've got no heat. I think most people understand who was the president during those wars, each war.
You characterize.
They were a little tender about it. You know, sorry for them to run around the country talk crying Watergate and crying pardon. But don't tread on me. That's always the Democrat message. That's always the liberal message. Sorry for them to go out and condemn and castigate and insult the president of the United States. Don't raise anything that might cause us any difficulty.
Senator, who is your black friend to ask you to get the Senate ahead of your white friend?
Pardon?
Who is your black friend to ask you to get the Senate ahead of your white friend?
Oh, there were several of them.
You only mentioned that one. Can you name any of them?
Yeah, I can name Art Fletcher.
Art Fletcher?
Right. He's from Kansas, yeah. But he also works in the White House.
Senator Mondale.
Good man. Very good man.
Senator Mondale characterized you as a hatchet man for the Republican Party.
Well, that's one of the ends.
On that role?
Pardon?
You feel you're taking on that role?
No, I didn't. I kept referring to him as my friend, and that's how he responds to me, which says something about Democrats again. He once said in Detroit in this campaign that the Ford administration had been responsible for increased suicides. He's been running around talking about Watergate and pardon and inferring somehow that the president might be involved or tainted. And so I wasn't surprised when Mondale, in the last stages of the debate, would characterize me that way.
You didn't feel like you were hitting below the belt?
Oh, no. I thought we were very kind to the Democrats, considering what they've done to this country.
Thank you very much. The president was here Friday, and you're back in Iowa again today. That would seem to mean to me that perhaps you're expecting a rough time getting the farm vote.
No, that's would indicate just the opposite. We're working for the farm vote. We're working for votes of all Iowans, and we're very hopeful. That's why we're here. If we didn't have hope, we wouldn't be here.
Most recent Gallup poll shows you still trailing by 6 points. Do you have anything to say about that?
Yeah, I wish it were closer. Wish it were the other way. But I think we're probably still behind, but it is close. You know, when you were 30 points behind at one point, or 28, or whatever it was, and now you're within striking distance, you're in the home stretch, we've regained the momentum, it seems to me that we're going to pull it off.
Can you make up 6 points in 2 weeks?
Oh, sure, we've made up 24 points in how many weeks? Eight. So even on that schedule, we'd be a dead heat in 2 weeks.
Thank you very much,
man. Pretty lucky.
24th St. Cecilia's Day is today, and we have with us today two of our national directors and our vice president, Nick Blanchard, Clarence Allen, and Merlin Grope, president of the Iowa Striking Association, and member of our board, Mr. Blakeman, a member of the Iowa board, Mr. Seeley, and Mr. Kern, and Mr. Heck, excuse me, Mr. Hanson, down on the end. Of course, my wife, Ann, she's active on the Farmers Report Committee in Iowa, Mr. Engstrom, Mr. Latham, Mr. Shetler, and Mr. Green. I'd like to call on Nick Elijah to open this up with a statement from the American Soybean Association.
Senator, again, I'd like to welcome you on behalf of the American Soybean Association. You know, we are involved in international marketing and so forth. I think we're involved in about, we have seven different offices and about working in 56 different countries. We're representing about 350,000 soybean growers that are participating in market development and research work. I think we'll proceed with a policy statement, Senator. The American Soybean Association has long been firmly committed to the principle of free trade. We have proven this commitment by refusing to endorse import restrictions on products that compete with soybeans, such as palm oil. Even when these imports pose a serious threat to the soybean market, we recognize that free trade is a two-way street. If we are to reap the benefits of free trade, we realize our competitors must also be allowed to trade freely. Rather than erecting trade barriers against the competition, the American Soybean Association prefers to maintain demand for our products through a more positive approach. With our vigorous foreign market development program, we've been able to meet our competition head on and continually increase demand for American soybeans. Having worked to protect free trade and to build foreign markets for soybeans, nothing could be more disastrous than an export embargo on our product. Such embargoes destroy our foreign customers' confidence in the United States as a reliable supplier of soybeans, forcing them to turn to other suppliers, to other products, or to ill-fated attempts at producing their own soybeans. In many cases, the shift is permanent. When this happens, it is not only the American farmer who loses, but also the nation's economy and each individual American. The importance of farm exports to our nation's balance of payments is widely recognized by economists, but unfortunately, not by many of the consumers whose pocketbooks are directly affected. In addition to holding down the cost of imported goods, farm exports provide over 1 million jobs for American workers and stimulate the economy in numerous other ways. Export embargoes also not only hinder the United States' ability to earn foreign exchange, they also inhibit agricultural production by causing prices to fall. Given a favorable economic climate for production, including a firm commitment by our government to free trade, the American soybean farmer will continue to rise to the needs of the nation and the world.
Well, I subscribe to that statement. I think probably everyone in this room knows my interest in agriculture and where I've been the last 16 years in Congress, 8 years in the House Committee and 8 years in the Senate Committee. That may be one reason I'm on the ticket. I've never said that with certainty because I assume there are a number of reasons, but the President's indicated to me that one of my roles, starting in January, as Vice President, will be in the export area. Of course, you've been in this long, long before I started, and one of the leaders and pioneers in developing exports, and you know probably better than any other group that that's where really the future of agriculture lies. And if we're going to develop our exports and make it possible for farmers to make a profit, we have to continue a strong export market. And even though our exports have tripled over the years, past few years, some of that's due to inflation. It's not all quite as good as it seemed, but they have increased, and we've got a strong export program. I understand your concern about embargoes, and President Ford understands that concern. I would just say in a general, and then we get into specifics, that we very much, of course, want to win the election, not solely for selfish reasons that they come to everyone naturally. But also we believe that we have the right programs, particularly in the field of agriculture, and we're moving in the right direction. And it just seems to me that it's in the interest of American agriculture and the consumer. Consumers sometimes fail to understand the importance of exports and the balance of payments and all these other things. They lose sight of the fact that the farmers sell everything at wholesale and buy everything at retail, but that you're also consumers. And it just seems to me that having been associated with agriculture in the Congress as I have, I understand some of the problems. I don't suggest all of the problems. I don't suggest I have all the answers. I've been on the Ag Committee and now the ranking Republican. I find a great deal of sentiment for our farm program. We always like prices to be higher. I find no sentiment for embargoes, and I think we understand that. I said it was a mistake at the time, and I haven't changed my view. I would also express my own views, the administration's views against reserves, which I believe, are used to depress the market. I saw enough of that, or had enough of that, in the 60s under Orville Freeman. My counterpart has introduced an export licensing bill which would create reserves. Apparently, Governor Carter is for reserves. I think, as I've said, too, and tried to point up in the debate on Friday night, labor leaders are going to have a strong influence in the Carter administration, if there is one. And I don't suggest they shouldn't have an influence, but I said they shouldn't dominate policy in either party. Of course, they don't dominate much in our party. They've sort of written off the Republican Party. But that's a factor that should concern farmers, whether it's right to work, Proposition 14 out in California, or whatever it may be, whether it's future embargoes. And I say from the standpoint of embargoes, Governor Carter's quoted Reader's Digest as saying one of the causes of inflation were excessive sales. He used the word excessive sales to Russia. So take that along with their platform and their export licensing provisions and Humphrey Hawkins. It just seems to me that farmers have a pretty clear choice in November. That should be President Ford. So I'm obviously here to help President Ford, and because I've figured out if he makes it, I'll make it. I think if he makes it, you'll make it. I disagreed with the export restrictions on soybeans, too, so I'm consistent. I think that pretty well summarizes what are the prices as of last Thursday or Friday. Soybeans.
At 6:40 has been closed Friday on the Chicago board.
Cash price is probably around what, 565, 570?
Yeah. A little higher than a year ago, I guess.
A little higher, yes.
Sometimes we realize you're on a tight schedule, but we did want to have some exchange.
Oh, sure, yeah. I just listened to
any of you might have. And Merlin Grote is the other national director we have. Might have a comment or a question, Merlin, as the president of the Iowa Association.
Well, on behalf of our directors and the association, we appreciate this opportunity to meet with you. Our directors are here, and I'm sure represent a cross-section of bipartisanship, but I think the interest is consistent in their desire to represent soybean farmers. I would follow up on one particular point, and that as a vice president and working in the export area, I think there was one point that farmers would be interested in getting across to representatives of government. That when hard decisions come, and there are hard decisions in government, that in the agricultural field, in those hard decisions, and before a decision is made, a thorough effort, as much as practical, is made to get the input of grassroots farmers ahead of time into that decision. I think this would curb the frustration which farmers feel in having to react to a decision after it is made without the feeling of having any input into that decision. It would also eliminate some of the explaining that public government officials have to make after that decision is made. And I think as a general point, this was what I would state as an opening remark. These gentlemen are not tongue-tied. I'm sure they can ask you questions in their own interest.
They don't have to ask me. They just give me their views. I mean, I'd be happy to respond. I agree with you, and I think that's probably, had there been a little more explanation about the embargo, you know, the president never really had very many options in the embargo when they had the pressure from organized labor and they wouldn't load the ships. And I didn't hear any Democrats screaming then about the embargo except George McGovern, notwithstanding what Senator Mondale may have said in the debate. They're very quiet because they knew where the heat was coming from. It was coming from George Meany. And they don't tangle with George Meany. They know where their bread's buttered. And but it was, the options weren't that many. And I think the president, he did opt, I think, for the wrong choice. But if we had the discussion in advance, I think it could have, at least you could have prepared the people for what farmers, what might happen. I mean, just read it in the paper. The despite the long-term agreement, which I think is a plus, it's going to stabilize a lot of things with Russia, the $6 to $8 million agreement, a ton agreement. And all I can say is that I think we've tried to do that in our own state. I think the farmers there would agree that we've had a pretty good dialogue. We don't jump off the deep end without consulting with some of our farm friends. We're not all Republicans. We don't run around checking their blood types or their party labels. We're looking for leadership in agriculture. And we know that you find it in both parties. So,
Senator, what is your feeling of the Chicago Board of Trade increasing the daily rate limits on soybeans? They rate it from 20 to 30 cents a bushel. I think that's to take effect this week.
Monday.
I've just heard it, so I don't have any...
No comment
on it.
I think it is a concern to the soybean farmer in particular because of the erratic behavior of the market patterns.
Dick, along that line, my question might be if this new commission that was formed has any input into this gyration that they go through, can't they do something to forewarn the people this is coming? Help them more, they could do it 60 cents.
Right. Yeah, I think, and I'd have to check the chairman of the new commission. We've had them before the Ag Committee once after the potato thing up in that area. And when is this announced?
Well, it's been discussed for the last couple of weeks, but I think
they decided to implement it.
Implement it this coming Monday, I think.
But about 2 weeks ago.
Yes.
My understanding is the Board of Governors met and decided that they should put in 30 cents.
How do we know they're not going to go to 50 right. cents the next day? This is a concern.
Well, that's what they're there for. You know, that's what we gave them all this independent authority and created a new commission.
Yeah. And it looks to me like, as an outsider, that you know they don't have any impact on the Board of Governors.
Now, they ought to be able to provide whatever protection someone's looking for without imposing any restraint on the farmer, but I'd have to check it, and just to have it off the top of my head, I'm not totally off base.
I'm more concerned about this export thing. We can't be sure of anything even after Ford said he's going to do it, because in the last three or four times, like, he said one thing like this one in 74, he said on Wednesday, absolutely no embargo, and Friday we had one, and... I know that there's pressures that cause this, and maybe there was a good reason to have it, and maybe there wasn't. But I would like to see something like this American Soybean Association resolution put into law, which I don't know what the exact wording is here, but basically what it amounts to is before any embargo can be placed on soybeans or corn or wheat or anything like that, that there would be public hearings. It could be the Senate and... House Ag Committees meeting together and have the hearings. They don't have to be two separate hearings. They should have these hearings with all interested people having a chance to present their case and bringing out the facts, and then the recommendation come from that before the Secretary of Agriculture or the President can place an embargo. And some people argue against legislation like this because they say, well, that would just trigger exports, you know, the people come in and buy. But there could be a clause put in there, legislation of some kind, to where all sales made after these hearings were called, that those sales would be subject, you know. And so I don't think that's a valid argument that it would run prices up. And I think that's an absolute necessity, and that it should be reviewed every 30 days as we go along, because if you bring out all the facts, most of the time we don't need an embargo. We've never had an embargo yet, in my opinion, that we needed. That served any useful purpose. Even the one that Russia, which he's talking about, that worked out this 6 to 8 million tons a year, that really didn't benefit the farmer. About all the benefit from that was American shipping. And you don't make any money raising for a market that you know it's there. I mean, you get the price raises from the unexpected.
Yeah, I think the other side of that coin is the first Russian sale, the farmers didn't benefit because it was unexpected. They came into the market, they bought huge quantities of wheat, prices were very low, it was all over. The farmers gained nothing, but the Russians have bought a lot of cheap wheat. Now, the other side, there's still another side of that coin. That meant that we got rid of a lot of stocks that would have been hanging around on the market later. So I guess the net result was that prices did go up because of the first sale. But Congress got into the act. You know, it's not all the executive branch. We like to mess around, too. We do a lot of it. There are a lot of us who all have different ideas. Some of them may even work. I don't know. We don't introduce those. But so we want to prevent this Russian, what did Senator Jackson call it, the great grain robbery, he referred to it. He thought he's going to be in the White House because of that. But so the Congress wrote some provisions in that we had to report to the Congress or report publicly or whatever when somebody's coming into the market, protect the consumer, and also protect agriculture. But the embargo issue itself, I think, is at best neutralized. We don't hear, all that I can do is to get a little partisan here. We don't hear Governor Carter coming in Des Moines anymore and saying there'll be no more embargoes. And on the way out, some guy from the Register grabbed him and he said, well, maybe there might be an embargo. And then his counterpart, Senator Mondale, has introduced legislation that would require embargoes. We didn't have so much in reserve. Then he had this interview in Reader's Digest. And I think it all boils down to the fact that both the parties are pretty well pledged to be no more embargoes unless there's some emergency.
Well, that's the idea of this, though, is to make sure that there is an emergency before it's declared. Maybe there is.
But beyond that, I think we have to look at who has the influence. Who's going to have all the influence in the next administration? Going to be farmers or labor leaders? And I don't see many labor leaders hanging around the Ford Dole headquarters. But I see a lot of Democrats hanging around Meany's headquarters. And I think it's one thing to respond if you have a concern for the consumer. You know, we had the Consumer Protection Agency, which I voted for only after my amendment was adopted to exempt agriculture. Because that was another threat to sales. If you're going to have some agencies say we can't sell anything to Russia because it might make prices rise for the consumer, then the farmer doesn't have a chance. This may be some answer. I'm not certain about a Senate whether you'd have that much authority vested in a committee, but at least it could be maybe worked out so one body of the Congress could object or something.
Well, that's the whole idea, the thing, to bring everything out to where the President can see it, and then it's his decision. It's still, rather than the way it is now. I mean,
but there's still one other factor. As you know, if you're going to have... If you've got to discuss every deal out in the open, then that country may decide to go somewhere else.
That's what he does if you place an embargo.
I understand, right. So we got to. It's got to be a mix. When it's a buyer's market, you can't hold him on a string too long, or he'll be looking across the street somewhere. And we've got the stuff. We've got the commodities. We're now... worrying about the EEC and the levy to keep our stuff out of there. That's probably as important as any embargo. And we think we can deal with that. But that's... we've had about a billion bushels in oil go overseas through Public Law 40 program, which I think is a very important program. Wasn't even mentioned in the Democrat platform. And so we think our head's screwed on right as far as agriculture is concerned. And... I'd say we kind of made some mistakes.
Senator, let me kind of... We had, just 2 weeks ago, four Japanese that are responsible for 3 million tons, in particular four gentlemen. They were vitally interested in the Dole Amendment to the Export Administration Act. I told them that it died with the death of the Export Administration Act. This association supports this amendment in allowing the Japanese or other people to establish an area that products in this country. Do you still support that?
Oh, yeah, I think that's... you're talking about the one where they could buy it and...
Buy it and store it in this country, and it'd be...
That makes a great deal of sense. In other words, they have their own reserve.
Yes,
you don't ask the American taxpayer or the American farmer to wait it out. You let them buy it, and we've got plenty of storage facilities. And they pay for the storage, then it's theirs. It can't be tied up some other time. But it did die with the Export Administration Act. We think it's a good idea. We don't find any resistance to it in Congress. It's not a partisan thing at all. It just seems to make some sense.
Senator, I have a question on the loan rate. Increasing the loan rate on corn from $1.25 to $1.50 and raising the loan rate on wheat to 2.25 without raising loan rate on soybeans. The question is, could this perhaps cause an imbalance on a production basis because of protection that an increased loan rate would provide?
Isn't it actually on the, what is it? What's the loan rate on soybeans?
2.25, is it?
2.50.
You know, it's not significant.
Right.
But this is what concerns me. Are we going to raise more corn and more wheat and perhaps deteriorate the acreage in soybeans to where we cannot fulfill the commitment to our foreign customers? Or is the price factor going to take care of itself?
You're not going to raise more wheat at 2.25 a bushel or corn at $1.60. And of course, that can be adjusted, but I think what happened, particularly in the wheat areas, corn is not what it should be, but you can still break even raising corn. I'm not certain you can at raising wheat. Just to get a lot of people out of the bind with their local bankers and ease up some credit in rural areas, and I don't think that will happen. We don't want that to happen. We don't want to get back into a high price support program, which again is, I think, the philosophy of the other side. They haven't spelled it out. We're going to stock up and store up a lot of wheat and pay $1 million a day for storage. That isn't the intent of increasing the loan rates at all. We don't want that to happen. And certainly we don't want them to shift to other crops. That wouldn't be in your interest or theirs either in the long run.
Senator, because of the time element, we've got time for one more question, I think.
Well, again, it doesn't have to be a question. I'm about to run out of answers. I'm back in Houston.
Senator, I've got one question. How do you stand on locking Dam 26?
Well, I supported the Nelson resolution until I was assured by Bob Ray when I was here last that the environmental question had been answered, so I support it.
I would like to thank you, Congressman Grassley, for coming along.
I don't mean to run away here now. I'd be glad to stay, but I want our time probably. Oh, we're running away.
We're running pretty late.
But I think just to finally, I just want to make one, not a pitch, but agriculture is important in this election, and I think it was Harry Truman, as Chuck reminded me coming in, said when farmers are mad, they vote for Democrats. When times are good, they vote Republican. We just believe we have the best program. We believe we understand the necessity of free market, unencumbered. And I really don't see much wrong with our program. I think we need to adjust it next year and update it. I find most farmers sort of like some of the freedoms they have, and they're not producing for the government. They're producing for the free market. We just want to make certain we don't restrain that free market. That's what you're suggesting in the embargoes. And again, it's not partisan in the sense that any administration should deliberately set out to destroy a market for farmers. They don't hinder anyone else's market. Now, we've had talk about an economic declaration of war by Governor Carter if there's another oil embargo. I don't think that answers any questions for the farmers. And so I just say take a look, and I think President Ford's been fairly forceful in his statements on embargoes, and I'm going to be there to be of assistance, and I wouldn't dare do anything like that coming from Kansas.
Well, thank you very much, Senator Dole, for coming and visiting our office here, and we appreciate it as a soybean farmer that you have a concern.
Thank you.